SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Well, one, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to SiriusXM online, and at our website as well, stevebick.com. Big weekend. Big. Huge. And it really starts today because between the regular Stronach 5 action that's become kind of entrenched at this point, as well as the carryovers in New York, and every indication, despite the fact that it's still darn cold here. Up here, it's in the single digits. Downstate, I think, in the high teens. But every indication, they would have canceled, I think, by now. I've been watching the SMS feed from the racing office in New York, and nothing yet. So I would have thought if they were going to KO the card, it would have happened already. So sweat it out another, I don't know, another hour maybe. By 10, it should be free and clear. But the pick six and Naira Betts pick five carry over. There's a couple more important allowance races and such, maiden races. Got to talk before we get into the weekend. We got to talk about yesterday as well, because there were a couple of performances, one male, one female, that you know, we had been looking forward to, a couple of those races. And boy, Samantha Siegel has got to be excited. The win by Extra Hope in that allowance with him, Kingly, Big Scott Daddy, and Gray Magician. You know, we started talking about that race with Peter Miller. But yesterday, 3-1, Flavian Pratt and Extra Hope established, you know, early forward position, hounding Gray Magician, and looked like a winner every single step. And I got to think that after stopping the clock in 1:34:3, Samantha has got a very interesting homebred going forward. Had kept, you know, very good company, obviously, and, you know, having been third in the Los Al Futurity at a big price behind Improbable. And, of course, Mucho Gusto goes tomorrow in the Lewis. But this was a step forward for the Mandela trainee, Shanghai Bobby, out of a Tisnow mare. Lots and lots of hope. Always exciting and easy to root for Samantha Siegel and the JMS team. And Extra Hope looks like he's stepping forward as a three-year-old. And on the filly front, if you didn't see the performance at Gulfstream, Queen of Bees at even money for George Abro and Kingsport Farm. This is a flatter filly that certainly looked impressive breaking her maiden at the beginning of the month, and then comes back here 4 weeks later and follows it up with a nice allowance. And she, it seems, very rateable. This was a mile stretched out from the 7-furlong debut. You know, she missed by half a length in her 6-furlong debut, flatter out of a Wild Rush mare. And clearly, Abro's got an Oaksy-looking type filly. She's a May foal, and so maybe taking his time. Got to expect you'll see her in a stakes company next. I mean, figure-wise, it was actually a tiny step back from the 92 buyer in the maiden win to a 86, I think, and if I'm not mistaken, and I'll check that. 87 buyer. So just a modest couple of clicks, but she couldn't have looked better winning yesterday. And there was also, I'll throw in one more. There was a maiden race that we were watching, again, because of some of the people we talked to this week, including Steve Asmussen, and Voigt was a winner in his third start, the FedBiz Heiling Brought Colt. This was a turf sprint at Fairgrounds, and kind of sad, again, mentioned Morning Lines passing in New Mexico yesterday. Morning Social ended up second in here in the debut, but Voigt wins off by himself by five lengths under Florent Giroux. Back for a second, catch you up on the Gulfstream mishap yesterday, and very, very scary. And I imagine many have seen it, but the incident that involved Montalvo and Marat and horses from Jose Pinchon and Alan Benson. Marat comes out of this with a couple of vertebrae fractures and some other injuries, and we'll get you more when we talk to Marty McGee. Is actually going to join us next so he can detail it, and if there's anything further later in the morning, Mike Welch at the end of the show today too. But this was right in the opener, and you know, there's been quite a bit of recrimination tossed about involving Paco Lopez, and Lopez is very frequently a target of criticism for, you know, what could be described as freewheeling, a freewheeling style in the irons, and certainly coming under, you know, under critique for what transpired here. And there was quite a few things going on. I don't need to get into the, you know, the full ins and outs, but you know, his movement on Dixie Princess, and Dixie Princess was disqualified to behind the field afterward. But heel clipping incident that precipitated the whole, you know, the whole set of reactions. So hoping for the best for the Bug Boy, and of course the Marat family. You know, obviously concerned, and we'll get you know, we'll get the latest as it happens on Romero Marat, and hope for the best. What can you do? And Montalvo, for Carlos Montalvo, a ankle, what looks to be an ankle fracture. Well, it never good. Never good. Otherwise, looking ahead to the weekend, reiterate again the television package. You'll be able to enjoy the Withers and the Holy Bull and the Lewis on Fox Sports 2. Two and a half hour telecast, 4 to 6:30 tomorrow to kick off 12 weeks of coverage. And there was more. There was all kinds of other information that was emanating from this package, and there's more to come. I was in contact with Michael Mulvihill of Fox, and he'll join us next week with more of the details that was going to transpire. And I also, of course, as we got off the air yesterday, as we're getting off the air, let you know about that pick five, cross-country pick fives on Saturdays. So far in February, all set. Tied in with mostly with Oaklawn and Naira and Aqueduct, Oaklawn, and then next week Tampa and Aqueduct. Pick five, and tomorrow it's the 9th and 10th from Aqueduct with the 6th, 7th, and 8th from Oaklawn. And should be fun, always. And, of course, the Martha Washington, the stake at Oaklawn tomorrow. The other races in that set in the 6th, 7th, and 8th, 30,000 claimer, second level allowance, and then the Martha Washington. Those are the three from Oaklawn. We're going to do the usual deep dive on weekend preview into particularly Gulfstream and Santa Anita. We'll get the Withers covered, obviously, as well. Marty McGee is going to join us first. We'll get Marty's recap of last week. Pegasus Day. And Jay Privman, who actually just came back. Jay just got back last night from his Florida trip. So we'll talk to Jay, do the Derby Watch with DRF Privman. Nick Tamarill, we'll get Nick to look at the Withers as well as the All-Stakes Pick 3 at Gulfstream. That's the Forward Gal, the Swale, and the Holy Bull. We'll do a game builder session, put together a Pick 3 with the three stakes. And they're good. They're really fun. May have a horse to lean on and feedback in the Forward Gal. Though I'll tell you, at 12-1, I Ben Colbrook's filly, Front, on the outside, that's a, you know, when we talked on Thursday, there hadn't had a morning line. But 12-1 on Front, sign me up. Then the Swale, the Sprinters, which is very interesting because you got so many horses that are interested in the same place on the racetrack, you know, kind of pace pressing types. We'll see how that goes. And then, of course, you know, we know who the principals are, of course, in the Holy Bull with Maximus Mischief at even money and Mijos 5-2. You know, and then there's the ones that are going to try to shoulder their way forward, like Federal Case. Harvey Wallbanger, to an extent, might be ready for a step forward. So, we'll do that with Nick. Hammer, we'll check in with Rick. Then Scully and DeRosa together again. Not for the first time. Just together again. Tom Quigley, back from his trip to Florida. And Mike Welch. There's your weekend preview lineup. Am I missing anything? I think that I know that I'll tell you now before I forget later. Gus looked at the Stronach 5, so that'll be up at the website. And I looked at the late pick 4, which is really good at Santa Anita. So first race is not great. A maiden 40. But then there's a really good mile turf allowance for 3-year-old fillies. Some really good fillies in there. And then there's Solomini, who I think is ready maybe to step forward. Mile allowance. And then a solid 35 non-winners at 3. Good pick 4. I'm the host, by the way. Beat the host. We'll get to that, too. Break now. Marty McGee gets it going. Weekend preview.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit DRF.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Sally, go round the roses.
Sally, go round the roses.
Sally, go round the roses.
Sally, go round the pretty roses.
Roses, they won't hurt you.
Roses, they can't hurt you.
Roses, they can't hurt you.
No, the roses, they can't hurt you.
Sally, don't you go downtown.
We're back at the races.
Saddest thing in the whole
Marty McGee kicking off the weekend preview, and we can't preview the weekend without reviewing last weekend. We put so much into the lead up to Pegasus Day, and Marty, of course, handling a lot of the tracking of the fields as they came together. And Marty, obviously, the weather didn't cooperate, but seems like the day came off okay, pretty much all around.
Yeah, I mean, it was the third time we've had the Pegasus here at Gulfstream. They're still kind of tinkering with all the conditions and everything. They didn't get the full field of 12 and the turf didn't pay out the full $7 million. Weather was awful, but our man Michael McCarthy, I'm not going to call him you know what, but that horse came through. I mean, he was, you know, I'm sure that you've had people all week lamenting on your program that the fact that we don't get to see any more City of Life, but boy, he was spectacular, just like he was in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile and some of his other races. So a lot, and I cannot emphasize this enough, a lot of people are happy for Michael McCarthy.
Very
me.
Much. Yeah, no, we've lauded Michael's ascent, basically, and you know, didn't he had to really kind of work at it, getting established early on, and you know, to his credit, I mean, the people that kind of rallied around him and came to him, you know, starting with Aaron Wellman, who at Eclipse. I mean, Aaron Wellman was going to make sure that McCarthy, you know, got every chance with their horses, and you know, somebody like Bill Warren, who's not an easy owner. Bill Warren is got a, you know, pretty notorious reputation among the training community that, you know, that he's cycled through, and tough guy to please. And McCarthy is, you know, really between the lieutenant and City of Light, you know, gave the Warrens probably their best year. This is somebody who had St. Liam, and yet it feels like, you know, this was a absolute, you know, pinnacle of the Warrens' involvement in the game.
Yeah, I remember when he had who was it? Knockadoon with Tony Rhinesettler back
wow.
in the Derby, I believe, 94. If you look it up, I think it was Knockadoon in 94. He was a long shot and didn't run that good, but you know, he's a big Notre Dame guy too.
That's right.
A buddy in town from Maryland who said that his dad and I forget what the connect. His dad and Warren were like classmates at Notre Dame. I think it was class of 53, actually, and was telling stories about the guy. It's something like his dad sold some oil company to Gulf Oil back in the 50s for something like $400 million. So,
yeah,
doesn't really live paycheck to paycheck like some of them.
Well, this is a nice celebration, and you know, we talked to Michael on Monday, and you know, he's lost a lot of the those headliners that were in the barn that, you know, that have gone in other directions, but there's no doubt this was the breakthrough year for Michael McCarthy. You know, we're left also with some interesting storylines, Marty, going into the weekend. Did see the official word that both Bravazo and Gunnavera now are going to head to the Dubai World Cup. And interesting, you know, the lineup. We'll see how that lineup fills out with other potential American participants. Of course, McKenzie running on Saturday in the San Pascal, and seemingly headed for the big cap, but they may be hard pressed not to look at Dubai as well with him.
Well, you got Seeking the Soul too. Who, you know, yeah. I was assigned the sidebar after in the immediate aftermath of the Pegasus, and I couldn't find Dallas down here on the track because he had the smarts to stay up undercover. You know, where the near the jocks room and the paddling in the saddling area, but anyway, I ended up copying some quotes from him. But it was really interesting to document all the long shots that he's had right around 35-1, like Seeking the Soul was, who runs second in the big races, and there were two in the Derby and two in the Preakness. So it's quite a tradition he lived up to.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And then, of course, the big winners, anything to do with the family of Lemons Forever, provides the biggest winners. And it's amazing what Dallas has done with the, you know, with that, you know, with that legacy. Now it's continues to grow. Let's dive into the weekend, Marty, and they split the baby here by taking the turf races and moving them till Sunday, and the Swedish Chant and the Dania Beach. But now I guess the forecast looks okay for tomorrow, correct?
It does look okay. We're supposed to maybe get some rain overnight, but it's not nearly as dire as it had been when they made the decision on Wednesday to go ahead and hold back the two turf races, the Swedish Chant and the Dania Beach, for Sunday. It makes for a pretty – actually, I just wrote about the Swedish Chant and the Dania Beach for the Sunday editions. And there are a couple pretty interesting races. So that leaves us with the three races here tomorrow, the Swale and the Forward Gal, both the 7/8 races. And then the headliner, the Holy Bull, which is going to produce, you would imagine, the two or three or whatever horses toward the Fountain of Youth. And that's what I'm writing about today for Sunday also, is how great the Fountain of Youth might turn out with Hidden Scroll, maybe two of the other mod horses, Mucho and Country House. You've got Signal Man, who just moved down here sometime this week from Payson for McPeak. He's supposed to work tomorrow. He'll be on a regular work schedule. You've got Bourbonmore and Vekoma and whatever Todd and Chad have. So it's really going to be a blockbuster of a race, it seems like, here on March the 2nd for the Fountain of Youth. But and before going ahead with that, I know a lot of folks are pulling for Butch Reed. He's got what seems like a Derby horse with Maximus Mischief tomorrow. And then, of course, Mijos for Timmy Jerkins, a couple of the guys not named Chad or Todd or Baffert with some live wires for, you know, looking down the road to the Derby.
No doubt. And we talked yesterday, actually, with Tony Black. I had to bring the topic up, you know, given Tony's presence in the Philadelphia Park jocks room. The move to Jose Ortiz, what I identified as, you know, top jock syndrome, away from Frankie Pennington. Much discussion down there, Marty, on this topic?
You know, that's the first I've heard of it. It's a syndrome that's well entrenched over the years, and one that I kind of don't get. You know, I remember talking to Kent DeSormo many years ago about Stuart Elliott winning the Kentucky Derby. He says, you know, he went down there like a lizard on a log. It's just there's 400 or 500 jockeys, in my opinion, in this country who could win the Derby if you put them on the right horse. And you know, I have no idea what went into the discussions as to why Frankie Pennington was replaced. We all know how capable he is and what a top rider he is. But I would imagine that this would be the time to make the change, as opposed to right before the Derby to really.
Sure.
You know what I mean? If he, let's say he ran second, got beat a nose in the whatever, the wood or something, and then you replace him with an Ortiz or a Johnny V or whatever, that would seem more unsettling. So I guess they just kind of got it out of the way, bit the bullet, and made the change right now.
Well, you mentioned the two principals. Let's start with the Holy Bull. Any other news stories that need to be brought out here, aside from Maximus Mischief and Mijos? I mean, certainly federal case making now the second start for the Lowe's and Pletcher, you know, since the sale in November. You know, a couple of horses that are kind of nosing around, Epic Dreamer and Garter and Ty. You know, the horse at Dales that broke his maiden last time and, you know, did it stylishly going the mile and a 16th. We should probably bring up Harvey Wallbanger, too, a horse that was always intended and always expected to be of quality for Harold Lerner and Ken McPeak. We got very familiar with this horse last summer. Marty, Seth Merrow and I had Harold on the show, and that came in advance of the debut. And really, you know, he's a horse that probably deserves a little attention in here.
Well, it's the same old thing. I talked to all three of these guys, Kelly Breen, Dale Romans, and McPeak, about their horses for this race. And, you know, it's a thing where they're getting a real stern test. They're all eligible for one other than allowances, and they're making kind of a quantum leap here. But they all believe that the potential is there, and particularly Kelly Breen. I wrote something that's in the Friday Racing Forum about he doesn't want to spout off about this horse till he does something big in a big race like this. So he's really satisfied with the way he's trained up at Palm Meadows, and he's well drawn there with Irad Ortiz. I don't see how any Irad horse can be 15-1, which is what Jay Stone has made this horse. I'm thinking more like half of that, but I look for Epic Dreamer to run a better race than he did in Oklahoma when he was a beaten favorite in the Springboard Mile.
Let's move backwards and talk a little bit about the sprint race and the Swale. I would say at this time of the year, Marty, a lot of new faces. I mean, there's some horses that have got experience, and we've certainly talked about, like Call Paul. Then there's High Crime, the Darren Miller Silverton, that won so handsomely, breaking the maiden, did it, earning a real figure. But it does feel like this is a chance to get kind of familiar with what might be the 3-year-olds on the sprint scene.
Yeah, I wrote something to the effect that this is kind of a prep as it's evolved, instead of for the classic races. You know, these horses only run 2 or 3 preps a year. This used to be, years ago, a lead-in to the Fountain of Youth et al. Here at Gulfstream, but now it's more of a look-ahead to the Pat Day Mile or the Woody Stevens on Belmont Day, and it's really a good field, very well matched. I think about half a dozen of these horses, Steve, have buyers at from the last start around 85 or so, give or take. The Darren Miller horse, High Crimes, did get a 90, but we're kind of High Crime. We're kind of splitting hairs there. Very competitive race. I think whoever trips out the best will win it.
Who'd you pick in here?
My pick Well, Hermes only does Tampa, remember. So I guess I would go with, I'm going to go with the outside horse, Country Singer for Ralph. Love that open air outside box out of the shoes.
We love it. All right. Well, let's get to a forward gal conversation in. And this, you know, on the heels of Chad Brown winning his third straight Eclipse Award as leading trainer, this feels like it could be a nice day for Chad. And although he's not involved in the 3-year-old boys races, he certainly has got the horse to beat in here. Feedback coming back for her 3-year-old debut. It hasn't been seen since the summer. But the Ben Colebrook, give me all the 12-1 I can get on Frond on the outside. What are your thoughts in here?
Well, Ben had the horse who won here a few weeks ago, the Fancy Party Dress. She's still undefeated. And he made the decision in fairly short order after that race that filly won here to not run her back in the forward gal and save her for something a little more down the road in favor of Frond. So I think that in itself says a lot, along with the fact that Louis Saiz, who's winning, you know, 3 and 4 a day here every day, has taken them out, and she's, you know, she has the open air outside box. So I thought that 6-5 on the line was a little bit strong on Feedback, given that she hadn't run but the one time. But it is Chad and Irad and all that. So Fashion Faux Pas, I did give Arno Delacora a quick call yesterday to write about this filly, who's dominant against obviously lesser foes at Tampa in the Sandpiper in mid-December. He's high on her, so she's trained right along since that win, so she ought to be a factor with Javier. I would have to go with, you know, Chad's the one to beat, but I would give Fashion Faux Pas a pretty good shot in here.
Well, and of course, we did talk plenty about Fashion Faux Pas with Delacour, and it's a nice enough group and a good sequence. And I got to say, I was not put out at all that the two turf stakes were pushed till Sunday. I really don't see, you know, what the need is to, you know, front load everything on Saturday with 5 stakes. You know, put the other two on you know, on Sunday, and all it did was, you know, juice up what otherwise would have been a, you know, fairly mundane Sunday card. Marty, before we touch on those two races, we should mention the two maiden races, the 7th and the 12th. And I brought up Chad Brown because he's debuting a colt in that nightcap, Honest Mischief on the Rail. This is an Into Mischief colt, a Judmon homebred out of the wonderful Honest Lady, making this 1.5 to First Defense. And of course, you know, Honest Lady coming from the most important female family, not just in the Judmont galaxy, but Honest Mischief certainly has worked nicely at Payson Park. And Ken McPeak has got a sibling of Rated R Superstar, Shanghai Superfly. And there's some interesting seventh race siblings as well, where Rudy Brissett debuts Mass Appeal, the Spitestown out of Appealing Zophie, making Mass Appeal a half to Taprit. There's some other nice pedigrees involved as well. This is a couple of notes on the pedigree front in those maiden races.
Absolutely. You know, and just off subject on this topic, but the 18-year-old apprentice yesterday, Romero,
yes,
Mirage, went down. I don't know if you talked to anybody, but he went into surgery. And his agent, Walter Blum Jr., told me that they're going to fuse a couple of his vertebrae. He said they're actually going to do the 5, 6, 7, and 8. They do expect, fortunately, for him to have all his, you know, he should be able to walk, should be able to use his hands in due course. But obviously, when you undergo something like this, it's where he needs a lot of our support. So, you know, just a terrible accident here yesterday. The kid really hit the ground hard when his mount clipped heels and fell. And another jockey, Carlos Montavo, suffered a fracture. It looked like a hairline fracture in an ankle. I did talk to Boogie Mirage, Aubrey Mirage, who is the uncle of Romero Mirage, after the incident happened yesterday. They were all upset, he and his family. It's a large family. Rajiv Mirage chipped in on Twitter, providing updates. So a lot of people are pulling for the kid today as he goes into surgery at nearby Aventura Hospital.
Well, no doubt. And, you know, I also mentioned, the mounting critique of Paco Lopez and his, you know, his somewhat widespread reputation for being a little too freewheeling, and that coming under close examination out of this.
Absolutely. You know, I don't want to unfairly malign Paco, but I have heard a lot of testimony to that effect from people here, including, as I said, one of the members of the Mirage family. So, you know, it was such a, they were just, every race we watch every day, Steve, they're all in such close proximity to that. And you never know when something like that's going to happen. And it's just one of the horrible aspects of this game.
Well, no doubt. Quickly looking at Sunday, current makes his three-year-old debut in the Dania Beach. Casa Creed coming out of that nice performance in the Kitten's Joy to become a stake winner, our friend Lee Einsiedler, and a couple of others. George Weaver, Fed Fever, finally is going to get on the grass, and George has been angling for that. Kieran McLaughlin with Len Green's Thread of Blue looks okay, the hard spun, and this should be entertaining.
It's a good race. So is the Sweetest Chant, and Chad Brown tries to get his another winning streak going. You know, he won a remarkable 6 years in a row, the Sweetest Chant, before he ran second last year. He's got an uncoupled pair of Lafebvre, a French shipper, making her North American debut, getting first-time laces. She might be real tough to beat from the one hole with Irad up in the Sweetest Chant. He's also got a filly named Regal Glory, who's unbeaten in a couple of turf sprints up in New York, making her two-turn debut in this race. So I think Chad's going to be real tough in the second of the two stakes. The first is the, as you said, the Dania Beach goes as race 9, and the Sweetest Chant goes as race 11. That's at 5:13 Eastern. They'll run the last race around 5:45 here on Sunday. That's Eastern time. Kickoff for the Super Bowl, 6:30 Eastern. So you'll have time to cash your supers and all that before before you make your way to the nearest television.
Well, and as you bring it up, we'll certainly survey everybody today. What's your Super Bowl push?
I think New England will win in a tight one. You know, I usually had to play the money line. I had a buddy who doesn't know it unless he's listening right now, but he wanted to play the Rams on the money line plus the they were plus 110, so I've got I'm booking his bet. I'm essentially taking the Patriots straight up at the minus 110 myself. So, yeah.
I love it. Marty, enjoy, and I appreciate it as always, and we'll look forward to next week. We've got the Sam Davis on the horizon, and you'll be out in front of it.
I'll talk to you from Oldsmar.
I appreciate it. Marty McGee, everybody, DRF McGee, will stay right here on a busy weekend preview. And it was a busy, 8-9 days in Florida for Jay Pribman, but he's back on the West Coast ahead of tomorrow's Bob Lewis and the San Pascal. And we say good morning to Jay Pribman.
Steve, how are you?
Excellent, Jay. And you had a nice, that's what you call a nice trip to Florida.
It was good. There's a lot going on between the two Pegasus races and the Eclipse Awards and trying to get a head start on Derby Watch, which Mike Watchmaker and I will be starting up in a couple of weeks. So it was just a good reconnaissance mission on the back end of the big races last week.
And how many, here's the key question, how many stone crabs were victimized?
Quite a few. There were three stone crab dinners in that
nice
stretch of time. So, yeah, we did. I'll always enjoy having those down there. I love it down there for that.
Absolutely. Well, it's great to get you back. And before we talk about the 3-year-old action tomorrow, quick thoughts on the Pegasus event. We talked obviously about the eclipse last Friday.
Yeah, I think we saw two really terrific training jobs with two really good horses winning the respective races. I thought, you know, what Chad Brown has done with Bricks and Mortar is pretty remarkable. Of course, came off a lengthy layoff and had the one prep and won the big race. I mean, obviously the field was not, I don't think, as strong as by comparison to the dirt race, but it was still a solid field. And I just thought it was a terrific performance on part of both horse, rider, but especially trainer. And I can't say enough about the job Michael McCarthy did with City of Light. It's a shame to have to use the past tense with the horse being retired, but we all knew that this was the game and it was going to be the last race for both he and Accelerate. And I don't think Accelerate ran as well as he can. I don't think it takes anything away from the kind of career he had. But it looked to me like the way City of Light won the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile and then the Pegasus, that he was going from strength to strength, but now he's off to stud. But I'm really happy for Michael McCarthy, who's just continued to progress in terms of his career, and it really showed that when he has the stock, he can train right up there with anybody.
No doubt. And, you know, we also get the sense that a lot of those horses that are staying in training, Jay, including the 3-year-olds that are, you know, now have commenced their 4-year-old season, Audible and Bravazo, as well as, you know, the rest, you get the sense that, and on the turf side too, it was a kickoff to, you know, some good division action. Obviously, Bricks and Mortar is going to be a wonderful, you know, wonderful addition to the turf scene. You know, I thought all in all, it was a good way to say goodbye and a good way to kick off 19 in earnest.
Yeah, and to your point, that, you know, several horses that are going to come out of the Breeders' Cup Dirt Race that are going to head on to Dubai, like Seeking the Soul and Gunavera. So it's a good bridge for them to move on to that race. And, you know, I know there's two ways of looking at the Pegasus in terms of City of Light and Accelerate. One is, geez, it's too bad, you know, that we only got to see them the one more time. But the fact of the matter is, if it hadn't been for the Pegasus, you wouldn't have seen them the one more time.
That's right.
So you can look
That's right.
It either glass half empty or glass half full.
Jay, and before we move on, I one question. Given the way the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile was showcased in this on this day, is that an indictment of the Dirt Mile that we'd be better off forcing those horses into the Classic, or is it an honor, you know, an homage to the Dirt Mile?
Well, I like the Dirt Mile when it's a one-turn mile, because I think that's a truer race. I don't like the Dirt Mile when it's run around two turns, because I just think it makes for a kind of a wackier race, and the draw becomes so important. So this past year, for instance, when it was run at Churchill Downs, I think that's just a truer kind of race where you can really see the classic American Dirt Miler, whereas the two-turn races, we get horses who win that race impressively, but I think so many horses are compromised because of the draw. Like, for instance, in the two-turn Dirt Mile races, you know, I think Golden Sense was one of the most underrated and underappreciated horses that we've seen in the last 20 years. And he won that race twice. He was a brilliant horse. And, you know, mile racing really showcases some top-class horses who usually go on to be terrific sires. It's kind of been obviously the classic American distance is a mile and a quarter, but dirt mile racing, especially one-turn mile racing, like at Old Washington Park, or you get the Met Mile and races like that, I mean, you really see brilliant performances in those kinds of races, and I like the one-turn mile, dirt mile races. I'm not as big a fan of the two-turn races, and I think when we get the one-turn miles, you can really showcase brilliance much more effectively, and I think we saw that last fall with City of Light.
that? It just occurred. I mean, certainly the the dirt mile ended up looking like a key race out of Saturday. Turning
for sure.
Attention,
I mean,
you're right.
You know, they ran. Yeah, I mean, the 1-2 finishers came out of that race. But don't forget, I mean, both Bravado and Seeking the Soul had run back in the Clark, so it wasn't like they came straight out of that race and into the Pegasus.
Absolutely. Well, the weekend between the Eclipse Awards and Pegasus always feels like, at this point, like it's, you know, the last hurrah of 2018, kind of a coda to the previous season. And now we're rolling, and that includes on to the Derby Watch, Jay, the Withers, the Holy Bull, the Lewis, and I'm not letting you leave without some thoughts about that crazily good San Pascal that kind of morphed from nowhere into a terrific race.
Yeah, no, it's a really nice weekend. Like you said, there's three-year-old races this weekend, so we're starting to turn up the heat a little bit as we get into February. We're now about 3 months away from the Derby. Our Derby Watch with Mike Watchmaker and I will be starting in 2 weeks. So we don't like to peak too soon. We think starting any earlier than mid-February is kind of overkill for us anyway. That's what we've done all these years, and we're going to stick with that plan. But there's obviously some really interesting horses running this weekend. I think the most significant being in the Holy Bull with Maximus Mischief. His overall record is pretty terrific, and coming off the win in the Remsen, and looking forward to seeing what kind of progress he's made from a couple of months ago when he runs tomorrow.
Anybody else in there that we think? Mijos obviously seems to be touting himself off the maiden win, and it'd be great to get Jimmy Jerkins and Centennial onto the Derby trail.
Right, he came back after that maiden win and won the Mucho Macho Man. My concern with him is not quite sure about the two turns yet. That to me is going to be something to see tomorrow for me. He runs a little bit like a one-turn mile kind of horse, and I just want to see how he does in that situation tomorrow. You know, Epic Dreamer was a beaten horse when he took up in the Springboard Mile, but I think he has a chance to be better. Certainly to outrun his odds tomorrow, and I'm kind of looking at a cold punch of Maximus Mischief over Epic Dreamer in that one.
Interesting. All right. And let's go to New York before we come back to California. Your Withers thoughts?
Well, you know, I guess Lucky Lee for me is the horse I'm most interested in. You know, I have the utmost respect for Service. I just think he's a terrific trainer. I mean, the job that he did with Smarty Jones, for instance. And, you know, don't forget this. Even though it's a different trainer than Maximus Mischief, the ownership group has a lot of commonality, and that's one of the reasons that Lucky Lee is in New York. Even though he's been training in South Florida, it's kind of a divide and conquer situation with him. But I really liked his last couple of races at Parks, especially his most recent race. He's certainly an improved horse since he stretched out to a mile and since he added Lasix. And he's, for me, the horse to beat in that race tomorrow. You know, Tax ran a good race in the Remsen. It
yep.
was certainly a giant leap forward on Figs. That was his first race for Danny Gargan, and he looks like the next best horse to me. I'm less enamored of Moretti. He's probably a decent New York kind of horse, but you know, when Pletcher leaves the horse in New York for the winter, and he himself is physically in South Florida, that's often an indication of where those horses are on the pecking order. Now, certainly in terms of the race tomorrow, I think Moretti has a good chance in the Withers, but just going, you know, trying to look into the future, you know, I like others on the Derby trail more.
What's your read on Brain Trust, the Gary Barber purchase that Cassie also sends, the Maryland bred?
Yeah, I as I wrote in my recap, Steve, of the of the Jerome, he ran to me like a one-turn mile late-running sprinter kind of horse. So he's another one that, you know, similar to what I was saying about the Fountain of Youth and Mijos, or excuse me, the Holy Bull and Mijos. You know, this is a horse who I want to see if he's going to be as effective going around two turns. And this is at least an easier spot than I think the Fountain of Youth would have been. So I think it's a shrewd move to send him back up to New York. He's been training in South Florida since the acquisition and got a couple of works in there. But I thought when he ran in the Jerome against Mind Control, he just sort of hung a bit the last part of the race, like a horse who was wanting not to go around two turns. So that's where I'm at with him right now. I'm certainly willing to reevaluate if he runs off the screen tomorrow going two turns, but from a gambling standpoint, I'd be against it.
Fair enough. You know, and you mentioned one thing I'll add to your noting on John Service and Lucky Lee. The Chuck Zackney and the Cash is King group in general, you fold in Jaywalk, right, and they've got a pretty heady 2019 at their footsteps.
Yeah, well, yeah. Oh. If everybody stays down, they could have a heck of a spring. You know, and John Service trains the champion filly Jaywalk, and she's been breathing in South Florida, so she's nearing her return to action, which I think is going to be in about a month from now. I think she's supposed to come back right around the end of February, first part of March. So I'm looking forward to seeing her. I think she's really, really talented. I mean, obviously we saw what she did in the Breeders' Cup, but I think her intended comeback is supposed to be the Devona Dale on the Fountain of Youth card 4 weeks from today. I think that's the plan with her.
That's what I've got as well. And that day shaping up, as Marty indicated earlier, that day shaping up really well when we look at the speculation toward the fountain itself. Let's, Jay, bring things over to Santa Anita and the Bob Lewis, as well as that San Pascal. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm really kind of torn about my overall enthusiasm of this race, but I think, you know, the three best horses in the race are the three drawn towards the outside of the field, and we'll go in post-position order in terms of evaluating them. You know, Gunmetal Gray comes off a win in the Sham. He showed, I thought, in both the American Pharaoh and the Breeders' Cup Juvenile that he's a significant cut below game winner at this point. And I thought in the Sham he got a real setup. They went fast early and slow late, and he picked up the pieces and won the race. He's going to have to move forward off that race. It was his first start with Mike Smith riding him. So we'll see if he can take a step forward, but I think he's going to need to. The horse, obviously, to beat is Mucho Gusto. He looks like he's going to control the pace in here. But he's another one where I'm not sure how far he wants to run. He ran a good second in the Los Alamitos Futurity, but he was, you know, well behind Improbable, who's no worse than the second-best three-year-old in California right now. And that race got flattered with Extra Hope winning yesterday at Santa Anita. So, and I just think the way the race comes up from a pace standpoint, it looks like Mucho Gusto is going to be able to control things. So he looks like the one to beat, but I think in terms of that barn's depth chart right now, he's no better than the third best behind Game Winner and Improbable. And the horse that's interesting to me in terms of progressing in coming months is Nolo Contesto, who was a horse that I happened to mention, and you know, I do that annual at the start of the meet for December 26th. Here's some two-year-olds turning three to watch, and at that point he'd had the one race at Del Mar, but he ran so well that day with all the awful trouble that he had in that December 1 maiden race that I just said, I put him on the list saying, here's somebody kind of under the radar to keep an eye on. And when he stretched out and won last time, I thought it was a good, solid performance. He beat Omaha Beach, who's kind of become a trial maiden. He's finished second in three straight races and close finishes. But Nolo Contesto acts to me like a horse who's going to continue to progress. He has the pedigree to progress, being by Pioneer of the Nile. He's only had two runs so far. So I'm interested in seeing. I don't know that he's going to be good enough to pull it off tomorrow, just because, again, I think the pace really favors Mucho Gusto. But looking down the line, I think Nolo Contesto has a chance to develop into a pretty big player out here when you look forward towards races like the San Felipe and then the Santa Anita Derby.
No, no doubt, and that is the real intriguing question out of the Lewis tomorrow. And since you did mention Samantha Siegel's homebred, that was, I thought, a pretty impressive effort yesterday. Granted, you know, you got Sealed Slop, you know, but he had handled a dry fast track as well. You know, at Del Mar and the Bob Hope, and at Los Al in the Futurity when he was third, albeit beaten eight. But that seemed like a step forward as a three-year-old debut, Jay.
Yeah, I would agree, and I'm glad that they were able to get an allowance race like that to go. It's so hard these days in California to get a first-level allowance to go, and I think there's a lot of horses that really benefit by being able to take that intermediate step before you throw them to the wolves. And especially with that race being run 2 days before a graded stake, like the Robert Lewis, I thought it was good that that race went and they gave those horses a chance, and it certainly worked out best for Extra Hope, but they gave that group of horses that were performing in that race a chance to have an intermediate step to see if they could then go forward and go in a graded stake next time. And I think that's where they are now with Extra Hope. I mean, he's, I would think, would run in the San Felipe next off that.
You know, I would have to think that Samantha Siegel might be excited to get a three-year-old like this.
Hey, Samantha Siegel is one of the best people in the game. I have the utmost respect for her. She has a great eye for a horse. She picks out what she buys at auction. She is an owner that I think a lot of trainers who work with her like working with, because she understands the game. She's not someone who dictates what to do. She works with them, and every trainer I know who has had horses with her says really good things about the working relationship with her. And that, I can tell you from having done this for a long time, that is not the case with all owners.
Well said, and it's kind of cool that this is with Mandela too. You know, not that it wouldn't be great if it was Brian Corner handling, you know, or Paul McGee or Michelle Nevin, but you get Mandela for the price as well. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, she likes to spread her horses among a number of trainers, and certainly Mandela's done a nice job getting this horse to this point, and he's ready now to, it looks like, to go on and see where he stacks up against the best on the West Coast.
And since Mandela's name came up, I will mention today there happens to be a allowance, and Mandela, who's having a good meet, sending out Truffolino, a horse that looks like there's some upside going forward. I'm keeping an eye on the very good late sequence today at Santa Anita. Jay, before we wrap, the San Pascal, and obviously McKinsey's the horse to beat and everything, but kind of rounded up all the handicap horse suspects for this.
Yeah, especially with he and both Battle of Midway in here. I mean, the only one who's missing is Gift Box, who won the San Antonio and is going to just wait for the Santa Anita handicap and just go straight into that race fresh. But the race came up well. McKenzie's race in the Malibu was obviously terrific, and he looks like he's back on the beam. But, you know, Battle of Midway, I thought, ran a really courageous race last time. It was part of a pretty solid pace and fought off Dabster, and then, you know, Giftbox nailed them late, and I just like the kind of the rivalry that Dabster and Battle of Midway have had going in their last couple of starts, and made for some really good battles between them, and they're both in this race here, and again, they're going to have to hold off a late runner, and this time it'll be McKinsey, though he won't be coming from way downtown like Giftbox did. I think you'll see him just right off of those two. But it is, as you alluded to, a really good race for this level at this time of year. And, you know, fortunately, a couple of these horses didn't go to the Pegasus, because the way City of Light ran, they wouldn't have had any chance anyway. So this is going to be a better spot for them to move forward. And then we'll see where they go with either the the options coming out of this are either going to be the Santa Anita handicap or Dubai.
Well, top to bottom, starting with Pavel and a couple of horses that you know have been away since the end of last year, like Giant Expectations. There's Dabster, who takes over the role of Opportunity in that barn. The dance all the dances at any distance horse. And I'm really looking forward to the card tomorrow. There's also a maiden race that goes as the fifth. 7/8, got some firsters that might have potential, but Mandela again, Omaha Beach, and also that Baltus horse, Jay, One Bad Boy, who was down on the rail in the debut, and a little compromised by being down inside, and I'm looking for him to take a next step. That's Michael McCarthy's got Polar on the rail debuting, and there's a little bit going on in that fifth. That's a race worth watching.
Definitely so, and you know, there's you know, the horses that you mentioned are all horses that I think have pretty decent chances in that race. The you know, the Mandela horse, Omaha Beach, is interesting because he's the horse I was alluding to that Nolo Contesto beat last time, and so it'd be interesting to see how he runs vis-a-vis with that other race coming up right after it. So that's just something to keep your eye on.
We also kept an eye on Coliseum, that workout yesterday. Looks like he's going to regroup and try the San Vicente. And yesterday, working notably in the Citation bit to try to figure out a way to keep this horse, keep his head straight and keep him interested without getting sullen. And obviously, Baffert's got his hands full with Coliseum.
Yeah, no. He's a work in progress. I mean, and you're right. They are going to take a step back with him and go 7/8 in the San Vicente next time. But he just still needs. He's just his own worst enemy at this point. He just needs to behave himself better. You know, Steve, there's one other horse I wanted to call your attention to.
Sure.
Tomorrow, on the Santa Anita card in the maiden race, there's also a maiden race later on in the card, the eighth race which is also for 3-year-olds. This one's at 6.5 rather than at 7/8, and there's a horse in here that I had actually alluded to in my opening day story, and he didn't have a name at the time. And that's the Mandela horse that's on the rail, who's now called Time Is Now. But this horse had been working under the Dam's name, and now he has a name, and he's supposed to have some talent. Pratt is going to ride him in that race. He didn't draw great, but he's certainly one to just keep an eye on going forward. So I just wanted to bring him up since I had mentioned him, you know, like 5 weeks ago or so, and he didn't have a name yet. I just said, just keep your eye on the Tiz now. I was working under the Dam's name. So
it's pretty funny.
He finally got a name.
Well, and I see, you know, Tiz Now out of Star in the Meadow. That makes him a half to one of my favorites from the last few years. We miss Frankie.
And we do.
Jay, what a great visit, and glad you had a nice trip, and I appreciate all the input, and we'll do some recapping next week. Certainly some new faces to consider as we get out of this big first weekend in February, and the three-year-olds take center stage on the road to the classics.
Well, have a good weekend, and I look forward to talking to you next week.
Jay, who's your Super Bowl pick?
You know, I just don't. It's funny. I grew up in L.A., and I just never warmed up to the Rams, and I'll never warm up to the Patriots. So, you know, once the Saints, I was wanting of the final four. I was desirous of the Saints, and you know, as we all know, the stewards blew the call. So, I'm going to watch the game, but not with any level of passion and interest. How about yourself?
I'm wavering. I really have not been able to. You know, sometimes leading up to a game like this, you get you know, you kind of catch a wave, and I just have not. I think this should be very similar to last year to the Eagles Patriots, because the Rams do a lot of the same things the Eagles do and did. So I think you're going to get the same kind of you know, epic tilt here. I I'll take the if I can get 3.5, I'll take 3.5 in the Rams.
There you go. There you go.
All right.
All right.
I love it. Jay Privman, everybody. DRF Privman. We'll take a break. Top of the hour. And we're going to flip-flop. Nick Tamro needs a couple extra minutes. So we'll go to Hammer. And we'll catch up with Rick next. Hour two, Hammer and Nick Tamro. And then Scully and DeRosa. Weekend preview at the races continues. SiriusXM.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.